You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll hear about strategies for intervening in uncomfortable situations like harassment or potential altercations in public.
The Filipino man felt that the soccer player meant to hit him with a soccer ball, but the soccer player was about to also retaliate in some way. I was in that moment. I was like, I should intervene. I'm aware that I'm fearful. I was checking my scenario. Would this be a place to safely intervene? Realizing that, you know, I had so many tools, I actually was more comfortable in stepping up. And so the way that I did that was to distract the soccer player and say, hey, your ball is going into the street. And then after that, there was no altercation.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. It can be difficult to figure out what to do when tensions seem to be rising between people in a public setting, or when someone might be bothering, harassing, even on the verge of attacking another person. Groups like Holla Back have a long track record of offering trainings to help build confidence about what to do, how to intervene safely and in a way that doesn't escalate the situation. In response to a wave of violent attacks against Asian Americans, Holla Back has partnered with Asian Americans Advancing Justice to offer an adapted bystander intervention training. And as you'll hear, demand for that training has been very high. I talked with Paul Ocampo, Development Director for Asian Americans Advancing Justice Asian Law Caucus, and Dax Valdez, a senior trainer with Holla Back. So I talked with one victim of violence recently who was attacked at a bus stop in San Francisco. He said there were tons of people around, and what hurt worse than the attack itself was that nobody even so much as asked him if he was okay. I know part of the intervention training is to give people the tools to not be passive bystanders, but before we get into those tools, what do you think is at the root of this apparently really widespread inclination to do nothing during an attack, to look away?
It's fear, you know, and I think it's also, I mean, like, before we get into it, but our work, we really want to give permission to the people who are bystanders, you know, agency that they can help. But a lot of it is, I think, motivated just by, I don't know if it's going to happen towards me. So if I don't do anything, then maybe it won't happen to me. I can't speak for them, but I think a lot of it is just coming from fear base.
Yeah, and I would just add that people just don't know what to do. They think of intervention as having to step up. And by that, then you might find yourself involved in the situation. Also, you know, become the victim of the attack or the incident. So I think part of it's like not knowing what to do.
Yeah, and I've certainly heard that before. Do you find that that's difficult for people to overcome? How do you address that in these trainings?
So we break it down for them. We have a methodology called the 5 D's, and they're all small actions that we can all do to make big change. And so right now, I think the response to folks coming to the training are seeing these escalated incidences of harassment and physical violence directed towards specifically right now the Asian community. And maybe they're thinking, okay, how can I defend myself if it happens to me? But in our trainings, we break it down what harassment and disrespect looks like on a scale from small actions to the things that we see in the news. And knowing that, then reframing it through the 5 D's, they have power to intervene when an inappropriate joke or a comment is shared, or the physical action of somebody turning away or crossing the street, or maybe involuntarily flinching when someone else comes near that may be different from them. So really getting cued in to what those things are, and knowing that if you want to, because we always stress the bystander safety, if you want to engage, here is how you could do it. Here's how you can do it safely and comfortably.
Can you talk about those five Ds? As I understand it, they're distract, delegate, document, delay, and direct.
Yeah. Distract is just creating a distraction to de-escalate a situation. Delegate is asking somebody for help. Document is taking a photo or a video of what's going on if you feel safe. Delay is just checking in on the person who experienced the disrespect or the harassment after the incident is over. And direct is speaking up about the disrespectful behavior when it's happening.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about delegate in particular, because I've heard this before, that, you know, I think it was in a self-defense context, but this idea that if you just kind of say into a room, hey, can somebody help? You're less likely to get a response than if you look somebody in the eye and say, hey, call 911. Is that the case? Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, delegate and asking someone for help, you know, a lot of folks don't know what to do. I mean, that's just why they don't act during the incident. But if you're very specific, go find a store manager, go tell the bus driver, right? That, I think, will help people not only know what to do, but also just get the urgency of that action. And the other thing that we, in this training, that we would like to emphasize and make people reflect on is the over-reliance on calling 911. And we know that local law enforcement, local police have disproportionately harmed Black communities and other people of color communities. And so, you know, this training allows you to actually think about other methods, other tactics before you have to call 911, before you have to rely on the police, because a lot of the incidents don't actually rise to the level of assault or hate crimes, but an assault, a verbal assault, can be mitigated just through the five Ds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking about this actually with someone from Stop AAPI Hate. And I mean, there have been thousands of incidents reported to that tracking project. And one of her thoughts on this is just the ones that have been reported. And some people feel more comfortable than others reporting to law enforcement and just with law enforcement in general. Is that something that you advise, to check in with somebody about whether or not they would even want law enforcement to show up if they're, you know, the target of something like this?
Absolutely. Because bystander intervention, we focus on the person who's experiencing the harassment and we try to take care of them in that moment. So if that person does not want us to call law enforcement for any reason, we should respect their wishes and see if there is something else that we can do to help. Now, you know, the person who is in conflict, their status, whatever that may be, maybe it's immigration status, maybe it's prior history with law enforcement that make them uncomfortable for delegating to them for that. But if the situation, you know, becomes violent or if medical attention is needed, then yes, we say, please call the proper authorities to help you deal with that situation. Mm. So we're talking about nonviolent encounters and what can we do to support each other with that without the presence of police there.
Yeah, I mean, one more thing on law enforcement. Is there also kind of a timing issue here? Like, bystanders to a situation that's unfolding are there as it's unfolding. No matter quick law enforcement is, there's going to be a delay between when something's happening and when they arrive. Is that a factor too?
I mean, these moments happen split second, right? Mm. And so by the time local law enforcement actually arrives, it's many minutes after the fact. What we want to do is create a sense or community of safety, especially as we tend to the victim of harassment.
Yeah. And let's talk about harassment some more, because I think when people think about a situation where they would feel like they really need to intervene is when, or like someone needs to intervene, they might not even be thinking I need to intervene, is when things turn violent. But Dax, you were naming some situations which might not rise to the level of violence. Can you talk about under what circumstances people might be able to help with a situation that's unfolding, even if it isn't violent? Like what situations do you describe to people where they should consider stepping in or speaking up?
So for example, if, you know, we have all pivoted to an online interaction in our work lives. So if you overheard something inappropriate in a Zoom breakout, or, you know, we're just, okay, we're on a break and then somebody's like making a joke about whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's an opportunity, if you overhear that, to say something like, I don't get it. Or can you explain what's so funny about that? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, hey, when you say that, I hear this and it makes me feel like this. Is that what you meant? And in those interactions, hopefully that gives that person a chance to think about, what did I say? Is that harmful or hurtful? And hopefully it gives them an opportunity to self-correct, and then you don't actually have to accuse them of anything. And then they leave that interaction changed. Or even if it's something like, you know, somebody being stared at on the bus. And mm-hmm. if you observe that, maybe you can make your way in between the person who's staring and the person that's being stared at. And, you know, as you move your way to the front of the bus, oop, you drop your cell phone, you pick it up, and then you are standing right in front of that person's line of vision, so they don't have eyes on them anymore. And maybe that also, and then you can maybe just turn to the person who is being stared at uncomfortably and just give a small nod or a small smile. And the validation of that other person's experience, you know, that's not cool, I see this, I'm just checking in on you, that can go a long way. So those are two examples of using bystander intervention in non-emotionally, non-physical, physically violent situations.
Mm-hmm. Paul, did you want to add to that?
I actually had to employ, you know, the 5Ds recently at a rally for anti-Asian hate. A little bit of it was around just miscommunication. There was a guy playing soccer, and his soccer ball almost hit this older Filipino man sitting on the ground. And just because maybe of the tension and sort of the moment, that the Filipino man felt that the soccer player meant to hit him with the soccer ball. Mm-hmm. And so he started to try to defend himself and call it out. But the soccer player was about to also retaliate in some way. I was in that moment. I was like, I should intervene. I'm aware that I'm fearful. I was checking my scenario. Would this be a place to safely intervene? And realizing that, you know, I had so many tools, I actually was more comfortable in stepping up. And so the way that I did that was to distract the soccer player and say, hey, your ball is going into the street, and you might want to get that before a car runs over it. And then after that, there was no altercation. Everyone just went back to their normal lives.
Wow. Did you end up checking in with the person who felt slighted or felt like he might be getting attacked?
I did. I was like, I saw that. I hope you're okay. And he said, yes, that person has been looking at me, but thank you for stepping up and coming in to check in on me.
Wow. Okay.
It works.
Yeah. We never know, you know, what a difference we can make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple different conversations now with a variety of people where the topic of bystanders has come up. One is a community safety patrol with volunteers in Chinatown here. But also, I was talking with the president of the local union that represents bus and light rail operators here. And he told me that in cases where people don't want to wear their masks on public transit and they get combative when the driver tells them to put it on, they're actually asking for other passengers to speak up. And so I just wanted to talk about the value of just saying something. You don't even have to like physically use your body necessarily to diffuse a situation. Are there some other examples that you have on hand of where that's worked?
It's tricky because sometimes, you know, folks will choose to tune out. There was an incident a couple weeks ago in Florida, I believe, where a woman was asking a man to put his mask on. And at least when the recording went on, he was already discontent and then started yelling anti-Asian slurs at her. Mm. And she was recording saying, "All I did was ask you to put on a mask. I have to go home to my parents." And then again, maybe nobody else felt comfortable, at least while the video was running, to support her in that. Again, we don't know other people's stories, but we want to think that people will make the right choice. And people, most people do want to help. Sometimes they just need to be told what to do. And so
delegate, right?
Also, what I like, mm-hmm. what I like to say with delegate is, while you give yourself permission to speak and to literally raise your voice, don't be afraid to ask other people for help. So in that instance, like, a lot of people might feel that they're alone in this, but it can be something as simple as, "Hey, do you see what's going on? Do you think you can tell whomever, like, if maybe if they're not on the bus, do you think you can tell the manager that this man is harassing my family and I?" Or tell another person nearby, "Hey, you see what's going on? Can you take a photo or a video of what's going on?" Because they're directly dealing with the person who's creating conflict. So there are many factors with delegate, but also there are the fight, flight, freeze responses, but there are ways to get over that in the moment. And it's practice, right? We know we feel this way. What can we do in the moment to ground ourselves, be present, open our mouths, and then engage as calmly and as rationally as we can? And, you know, knowing that the other person may not be where we want them to be or need them to be, but we can only control ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a better way to ask what I was asking earlier, a better question than what I was asking earlier, is how do you evaluate the situation and decide whether it's time to say something or to do more than that and actually make your physical presence more a factor?
Yeah, you would want to assess your safety first. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the risks first around you, and then be able to intervene, because one, you don't want to escalate the situation and then cause harm not only to the person who's already the victim of the harassment, but also to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the very first thing that we emphasize on this training: assess your safety first, because you can't safely intervene if you will, you know, also become a victim in this incident.
I'm speaking with bystander intervention trainer Dax Valdez and Paula Campo, development director for Asian Americans Advancing Justice. Another thing that I want to bring up is from these community patrols is I heard one volunteer say that they decided to start going because they were worried about being a passive bystander, and they decided, no, I'm going to be one of those people who actually does something when they see something. But I think in that case, there's an element of being part of a group of people, because this is, you know, they're small groups, but they're groups of people who are walking around looking for things and just want to sort of be present when something happens. Is there something about being part of a group of multiple people stepping up rather than just being the only one that helps with this? And if so, how do you get other people around you to step in, you know, so that you aren't the only one kind of sticking your neck out?
I think when people see other people mobilizing like that, it gives them like maybe that moment of like, oh yeah, I can do that too. And when there's a group of people who are actively taking care of somebody, it is creating this environment and network of safety. So you're seeing, oh my gosh, they're helping that woman in need. Mm. I wish I could do that. Wait, I can do that. I am capable of that. And so it is just, I think it's a lot of, we ask people to do a lot of reflection about like what might be holding them back when they see harassment happening. And, you know, we explore a lot of reasons, and then, you know, yes, recognize those reasons. But what is great about this methodology is that it gives you a lot of options. One of them is called direct. The other four, you don't even have to deal with that person. There are multiple ways around that in order to make a difference and support the person being harassed. So there are a lot of options.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that you've been overwhelmed with interest in these workshops. Can you give a sense of the scale of the increase in people wanting to get this training?
Yeah, DAX has trained more than 50,000.
50,000?
Community members.
Wow.
Through our Asian Americans Advancing Justice affiliation, providing this training. And DAX, do you want to share?
Wow, yeah. DAX, you must be incredibly busy.
Yeah. So, I will frame it. So since March, since the attacks in Atlanta, or the singular attack in Atlanta, we offered our public trainings. We upped those and 45,000 people signed up in the first week. And then on average, since March, we've been training almost 6,000 people a week. Wow. And we started our relationship with Advancing Justice Asian Law Caucus in October, and with Advancing Justice AAJC in this partnership with Holla Back. We had our 1-year anniversary at the beginning of the month. We've trained over 50,000 people in bystander intervention.
I mean, obviously we're seeing these gut-wrenching incidents of anti-Asian attacks, and people are feeling understandably concerned and even unsafe. But this also isn't the first time that this country has seen a wave of hostility toward a certain group or even toward Asian Americans. Is there something about the coverage, the political situation, the pandemic, anything in particular that stands out to you that might be different this time that's spurring people to want to learn how to step up?
I think absolutely. You know, with the advent of technology and how fast it is, you know, how fast things are captured and then shared. But you're exactly right. Like, anti-Asian discrimination and harassment in this country is nothing new. But our previous administration did not help matters by exacerbating and calling COVID-19 things that it shouldn't have. And I think there is a lot of pandemic fatigue as well. And so folks not used to doing what they were able to do need an outlet, and maybe some of these beliefs and these fears that were quiet for so long were stoked by what they were seeing on the news, and then emboldened in speaking out or speaking up against a certain group of people just because they've seen it modeled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a through line here. In times of crisis, our communities, the Asian American Pacific Islanders, and also the Arab, Middle Eastern, South Asian communities have been scapegoated. So we see the same pattern, right? After 9/11, when our Muslim brothers and sisters, or those perceived to be Muslim, were subject to attacks, mm-hmm. similar harassment. Mm-hmm. And it's in times of crisis where we're seen as perpetual foreigners. And I think that contributes to the things that we're seeing on the ground.
My understanding is that this partnership has brought sort of an added element of like historical education to the trainings. Is that the case? And can you talk a little bit about what your two organizations have joined together to bring uniquely to these trainings?
Yes. So, it's a 1-hour training. And the first part is really about providing context to the moment. While we center the Asian American experience during COVID-19, we also want to ensure that people are aware of the history of anti-Asian racism in this country. And so that's an opportunity for folks who've never been exposed or educated about, you know, our communities. It's a moment for them to want to find a sense of connection, especially as how that context informs the current moment.
Yeah, and a lot of people in the chat sometimes will say, like, I did not know that.
What are you finding that people didn't know about?
About the Exclusion Act, mm-hmm. or maybe some of these other things, like, we don't cover it in our training, but the Page Act of 1875, Also discriminating against Chinese women in particular, or even like the Watsonville riots. There is history, but the what's that adage? The winners write the history books. So
That's right.
I know, growing up in San Francisco, there are areas, there's Chinatown, there's Japantown. We are aware of that it has history, but we're not learning about that history if we're not steeped in that culture until much later. So there are young adult books that are geared to educate the kids sooner, but that's not widely distributed because folks in Oklahoma or Florida or New York would not necessarily learn or need to be aware of what happened in history in California just yet. But a lot of folks share that, oh, I had no idea. Or the ones that were familiar with it would share that we didn't learn this until college or had to find out about it on their own. And so it is an opportunity and it is a privilege to be sharing this knowledge. And it also just blows my mind that the U.S. has such a mixed history and how it is celebrated, the perception of it is a little askew, I think. And
so it's a melting pot. Just, everybody gets along, all these different cultures.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But just like when we have to examine it, it is super uncomfortable for people to accept how this country came to be at the cost of other people and other people's experiences.
Completely agree with you. And I think that, this training is for everybody and not just for the Asian American communities who are interested and have requested this, especially through our partnerships with corporations and their ERGs, their employee resource groups. It really is for everybody, other communities of color, to learn more about our communities. And the other thing that we lift up in this training is that, we've been working on these issues for a while. There are organizations on the ground having been helping the community, even though, we're not well known or have not been recognized for that work.
Yeah.
And even if we lift the lens of the anti-Asian violence that's going on and how we're framing this methodology and how to be a good bystander, this is applicable to anybody experiencing harassment and disrespect. Knowing that in the Black and Brown communities, the Jewish communities, the Muslim community, the LGBTQ community, even the cishet, cisgender community, harassment exists. And these strategies can be employed to, hey, say that's not right. Let's do something about it and let's take care of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to give you both a chance to add anything that I didn't specifically ask you about that you wanted to say about these trainings, how they've come together, or your hopes for where they'll take us.
For me, it's come full circle. What I shared during the training is my own sort of experience on racism. Mm-hmm. When I was in graduate school, after a late night of studying, a friend and I went to a diner. And we were just, we're both from the Philippines, grew up in the Philippines, and we were speaking in Tagalog. And in a booth next to ours sat an older white gentleman. And he uttered with an earshot, effing Asian, effing gays. Mm. And, our server didn't seem to have been affected by it while we were affected by it.
Right.
And so the man just ended up leaving, thankfully, without any sort of escalation to violence. But in that moment, I, as an immigrant, as a person of color in Arizona, I thought, is this it? Will we continue to be subject to this type of, harassment? And so now here we are in 2021, and I'm doing this training, and I'm just like, Dax, I want to do this with you because it's providing a closure for me with that experience or for that experience. And I feel like I'm also empowering others who might in the future experience that sort of harassment.
Yeah. Dax, any closing thoughts for
me? That's awesome, Paul. Yeah, I was thinking at the beginning of this year, am I doing enough? What else could I be doing? And like I said, it's a privilege to be doing this work and the opportunity to hold space and have folks come to this training and see Asian identifying facilitators. That simple image, I hope, is giving people hope that, yes, we are here, we see you, we are representing you on the front lines. And even though, like, my experiences with anti-Asian harassment, they have not, thankfully, put me in any physical danger, recalling all of those, like, little slights, like, you know, asking, where are you from? Or having somebody hand me the Chinese takeout menu and say, hey, can you order for us? And all I could do was laugh uncomfortably because I didn't have any language to navigate that. And they were my friends, you know? And so, okay, yeah, that's just one thing. And then trying to think about, like, now reflecting upon it, I was like, oh yeah, I should have spoken up about that. So, you know, again, using bystander intervention against a range of experiences has been really great. And sharing these strategies for people, maybe they don't intervene this next time, but when they see harassment happening, if they're able to model it for somebody, they can make a difference, one person and one action at a time.
Absolutely. Thank you both for sharing your experiences and for talking with me about your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Dax Valdez, a senior trainer with Holla Back, and Paul Ocampo, Development Director for Asian Americans Advancing Justice Asian Law Caucus. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.